Okay, hi everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll go ahead and get started. People are coming in here. Good to see you all. So this is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are now in West Palm Beach, Florida. This is Thursday, January 16th, 2025. 4 days before the big inauguration. Everybody's excited here in West Palm Beach. And I'll go ahead and just bring people in. So thanks everyone again, and we'll go ahead and get started. Got lots to talk about, I'm sure. So a lot of challenges in the world, in Los Angeles and everywhere. And animals, of course, usually bear the full fury of everything. But we'll hold them in the light. And we'd like to begin our time with our meditation. So let's go ahead and do that, and then we can just open it up for the general conversation. So thanks for being right on time. We'd like to start pretty promptly. This, as you know, this is the third Thursday call, which goes a maximum of 90 minutes. Sometimes not quite that long, but pretty much that's what we like to do. All right, so we'll begin our meditation. And Madeline's right here too. Want to say hi?
Yeah.
Here she is.
Hello. Ah, Lisa is there
Yeah. Are you
too.
beings of light? We
Hi,
love
Madeline.
you.
Hi, everybody.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah. So, all right. So, yeah, we're at Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach in the little room here that they give us. And we'll begin our meditation. Now we got a pretty good crowd here. So, individuals. So let's turn our attention within and begin our meditation time. I always feel like I should start playing the piano now, but we'll have to do that on the energetic level. Let's become aware of our breathing, tuning into the field of truth that surrounds planet Earth, the truth field that has no beginning and no end, the eternal truth of being. There is one life living through all manifestations. And we give thanks for this particular incarnation and this particular physical vehicle and the opportunities that we have to awaken our consciousness for the benefit of all living beings. And we give thanks also especially for all our brothers and sisters who are working with us to help raise awareness about the threats to freedom and about the many benefits of the liberation of animals and about the possibility of human consciousness to leave the prison of delusion and step into the infinite field of awareness that transcends past, present, and future in the eternal moment that is the only true reality. We give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to respond to what is happening in the world in our own unique ways and to connect more deeply with our internal wisdom and the inner guidance system that we have that can always point us to the North Star of our calling, of our purpose, of our unique ministry and mission in the world. So let's just take time to give thanks for each other, everyone here, knowing that each of you, each one of us, everyone who's on this call, that what brought you here is a beautiful journey with certainly plenty of trials and tribulations and triumphs and challenges, a but the joy of being. We are here in this moment, together, finally, returning to the eternal teachings that liberate human consciousness in all beings. That we give thanks for each other, for all of our loved ones, for all those who are supporting us and have supported us in this life and in other lives. And sometimes the support looks like support, sometimes the support looks like challenges, questioning, perhaps even antagonism of some kind. But we see the bigger picture, that it is all for our growth, our awakening. And it brought us to where we are now. And we give thanks especially now to the animals of this earth and their eternal exemplification of the enormous number of positive qualities of grace, balance, authenticity, freedom, perseverance, cooperation, courage, strength, vitality, innocence, loving kindness, mercy, creativity, and so many more. May we learn from them and allow them to fulfill their purposes here on this earth, free of human harassment and interference, and be part of the awakening of human consciousness from the massive delusion of thousands of years of programming that reduces everything to mere matter. And now as we inhale, let's imagine that from the beautiful earth that supports all life here, that with every inhalation there's a warm golden light that comes flowing up through our feet and legs into our pelvic region, up into the lower part of our body. This warm golden light is the light of vibrant life, healing, and it flows all the way up through our organs, up through our spine. This golden light flowing all the way up through our heart and lungs, up into our shoulders, down through our arms and elbows, forearms, hands, and fingers, and then up through our neck, all the way up into our head, through our eyes and ears, all the way up to the top of our head. And now we see the top of our head opening, and a brilliant white light is coming down from heaven, swirling down and mixing with the golden light from the earth into a scintillating, sparkling, golden white light. As this white light comes down, all the way down through our head and neck, into our shoulders, down through our body, bringing wisdom and understanding. And this golden white light now fills our entire physical body and radiates out all around us, filling our entire space where we're living with the light of loving kindness, joy and freedom, compassion and harmony. Abiding now in this light, as our true home. So breathing together and breathing and radiating to all living beings the light of love and kindness in all directions. Abiding in our true home of love and benevolence and goodwill. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free and at peace and have the causes of happiness. As we radiate loving kindness with every exhalation, and with every exhalation now we radiate compassion in all directions. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May we do everything we can to relieve the suffering of others. Abiding in compassion and the heartfelt yearning to help relieve the suffering of other living beings. And with every inhalation, now we engender the feeling of joy. Great golden white light of joy. And with every exhalation, radiating joy in all directions. The joy of our true nature. The ever-present joy of being. We radiate this in all directions. Abiding in joy. And then finally now we allow our mind to calm down even more and just abiding in the light of peace and harmony. And just flowing forth the light of gold and white light, of peace and harmony in all directions, filling the whole world, the whole universe with the light, peace, the truth of peace. Seeing our beautiful earth bathed in the light of peace and bathed in the truth that underlying all the appearances is the great peace that upholds all manifestations, the great love that is the source of all life. Abiding in our true home of love, compassion, joy, and peace. Feeling that our eyes are filled with the golden white light of love, compassion, joy and peace. As we open our eyes, or when we open our eyes, that we will be looking with eyes of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and harmony and peace and understanding. And then finally closing our time together, each one of us in our hearts, connecting with our intention for this call, the intention that we have in our hearts, why we are here. feeling the presence of this intention. And then we close with this, again, the sense of gratitude for another beautiful day on this earth and this time to be together, to learn and to grow and to make our contribution that only we can make to the unfolding of the human potential, to creating a world that reflects our true nature. All right, so we can close our meditation time just with this thought of gratitude that we are part of the awakening of humanity during this critical time, that the vegan world of ahimsa is every day moving more and more closely to fulfillment for the benefit of all beings, and that our inner guidance system every day is becoming more and more deeply embedded in our daily consciousness, so that we move through each day and each moment with confidence that we are manifesting our life for the benefit of all in our unique way. And so it is. Thank you, everyone, again. Really appreciate your presence and your efforts on behalf of this world that is seems to be, you know, if I guess if there's 8 billion people here, there's 8 billion worlds. We, you know, each one of us inhabits our unique experience and realm. And so I'd love to share a little bit with you about what's going on lately and how it relates to the issues that we have. So first of all, I don't have any agenda for this particular meeting. I mean, it's kind of a really powerful time. You know, we now are just beginning the second quarter of the century. And we have a new president and a new administration in just a few days. And there's lots of feelings about that, I think. And then we also have these massive fires in Los Angeles. We have all, you know, other things too. That's not the only thing. But there's lots of people have questions about lots of different things. So let's see. I have it with a note here from Gino. Thanks about your new song that you did. I don't know if I've seen this one, but you want to say anything about it? It would be nice to hear, maybe. Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much, Will. Yeah, before we got started, I put it there so it wouldn't interfere with anything.
Great, thanks.
And I know you want to launch into stuff, so since you gave me the floor for this, I wanted to say two things. One, also on Monday, is a amazing day because it will be Martin Luther King Day. And Martin Luther King, to me, is maybe the best activist that the masses know of all time in the United States. He's an amazing man. All of my training in nonviolence and everything came through his approach. It was also the credo of Direct Action Everywhere to always approach protests in that manner. And I really studied him a lot. And if any of you have not heard Letter from Birmingham Jail, it is on YouTube and it's an amazing piece of work. So I really want to acknowledge him. That is huge that it's coming up again. The other part is about the song. And well, I think about sometimes when I do songs that are based more on social activism, I think of you because of the World Peace Diet and how you tie everything in that's happening in this world that humans are creating in the bad way do animal agriculture and how we treat animals, and we get away with nothing. We do not. We have diabetes, cancer, no matter what. I can eat this hamburger, go away, no big problem. Well, and then you die of a heart attack. But it also applies to wars and everything. So this piece is one of my favorites, and it's not because of my vocal quality, because the song itself does not lend itself to vocal histrionics. It's a very simple folk song, very easy to sing. Anybody could sing it. And it was written by Tom Paxton in 1967. And Tom was a famous folk singer in those circles in New York City, Greenwich Village, and everything. He wrote some really cool songs. And the song, like I said, is simple, but it also has a rather mildly sarcastic lyrics about the Vietnam War. And it's called A Willing Conscript, meaning a man that that went into the Vietnam War as a draftee. And it's very tongue-in-cheek. And it's got a great video with it that I had made by somebody that really goes with it. It's an illustrated video that is mild as well, but you can see the sarcasm in it. That is immediately followed by a poem that I recently wrote that is partially based on my past during the Vietnam War. During the Vietnam War, I was a conscientious objector. Miraculously, I got that status in upstate New York, which was very conservative. And I was prepared to go to Canada if I had to. But the poem is about, with my consciousness at that time, if somehow they had managed to get me to go to Vietnam, how would I have felt when I was in Vietnam? And I had my friend Dave do a video for that. So it's one thing after another, one video after another. The poem I got a lot of good feedback from. I used to be a poet. I used to write lots of poetry. So now everybody wants me to write poetry again. So I'm okay with that. I'll do that. So for some reason, this is, and normally when I do a song, it's about how can I make my vocals really great. And it's interesting that this is one of my favorite pieces, yet the vocals don't really matter that much, right? So anyway, thanks for listening to all of this. So it's there in the chat. If anybody wants to, look at it later, please do, and please support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks, Gino. I'm so delighted that you're keeping your creative fires burning and coming out with new songs and covers and yeah, I'll definitely want to check it out for sure.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, and these are eternal themes. I mean, the wars are going more than ever at this point, and people, like you say, I'm sure you go over to other lands and kill people. And why? Why are we doing that or supporting that? And so I wrote the World Peace Diet, I guess, in a sense, like you say, to tie all a lot of that outer stuff into our war against animals. And what I refer to as the boomerang effect, that whatever we put out comes back, and what we're putting out every day to animals does boomerang back, just like you said. We don't get away with anything, either physical disease or cultural disease or environmental devastation of various kinds. So yeah, good. That's fantastic. And I wanted to, if anyone doesn't have anything else specifically, somebody, I mean, Lisa actually already just mentioned the audiobook. That's true. I should kind of share my happiness about that, because this really was a big job. And I remember I talked about this a few months ago, that it had kept falling through when I tried to hire people to read the audiobook of the Food for Freedom book. And I just really did not want to do it, because I knew it was going to be such a huge, big job, because I did the World Peace Diet, so I know. But anyway, I decided that it was best if I read it myself. So I did the reading of that book, as well as the other book, which is The World Peace Way, the newest book that just came out before we left, because I set up a room in our house with sound equipment and baffles and things, just to sort of make a good recording. And so I did the so I recorded my voice. That's a pretty big job, to just read the whole both of those books, but then then to edit it And I think I was telling Lisa, we had dinner together last night at one of the local restaurants here that serves organic vegan food called Christopher's, that yesterday I finally finished the last sentence of the last chapter of the book, the editing. And my rough estimate is about 28,000 edits I did over the last, in the software. I mean, Adobe Audition, software. I just have to go. You have to go through and take out the breaths and move and make the right timing between phrases and sentences. And you just have to do it, and otherwise it's not going to sound, it won't sound very good. So I've been spending, many hours every day and doing it as we traveled, and then we're here at Hippocrates, and I've been very supported by my wonderful wife, Madeline, mm-hmm. bringing drinks and giving me encouragement and so forth. And so that's finished. So I'm hoping to be able to have it up on Amazon within the next couple of days. And then, because a lot of people really, nowadays, they would rather listen to a book while they're jogging or driving or whatever. And so we'll be moving forward on that and then getting the World Peace Way up as well. And while I was at it, for anyone who's interested, I also read the other book that never was made into an audiobook, which is the book on developing intuition, Your Inner Islands. I keep getting people asking me if that's an audiobook, and I always said no. I didn't want to deal with it, but I did that one too. So I'll eventually get to that one. But so anyway, it's pretty intense. It's pretty hard on the vision. I mean, just looking at a screen for, a very microscopically small, little tiny changes of 2 millimeters and all that, just for hours at a time. But I'm blessed, I think, with just pretty strong physical vehicle, so I seem to be able to do it okay. So that's been fun. And otherwise, Madeline and I are really enjoying our time at Hippocrates. We're doing concerts every other Sunday, and then a musical workshop every other Sunday here right after dinner. So it's music. They have a grand piano here. So, and then giving a lecture. We gave a lecture today on the art of healthy living. So we're doing lectures every week as well. And we have some other events planned. And I just talked to my friend, Phil Nikozisis, today. We had lunch. He came over for lunch at Hippocrates, and we set a date to have an organic vegan dinner at Mar-a-Lago, where Donald Trump is. So he said, this is going to be quite an experience. He said it's totally different now. Now that Trump is president, Mar-a-Lago is like the place where people from all over the world are converging. He said he went to dinner there because he's a member. He paid the fee, so he's a pretty wealthy guy. So he kind of laughed and said, membership has its advantages, So he's a member, and so he said there's like these people from super rich people from Iran were there, and other famous movie stars, and who knows, all these people coming, whatever. But I think it would be interesting, just to kind of see it. So we're planning on going there at the end of the month, at some point. And we have some other events scheduled in Florida as well before our next first Thursday. And Madeline is doing lots of knitting, and we're doing a lot of just discussing of the issues, like what's happening in the world right now in the vegan movement, what's happening with the fires, what's happening in general. And I did have some requests to talk about the fires, so we certainly can open that up. There's lots of different levels to it, but to me it's a pretty obvious something suspicious going on here. And I think, we've seen videos of these, looks like directed energy weapons coming down, and other videos of, it looks like arsonists setting fires, and sure are strange. I mean, to have these kind of fires in January, it's like not the time. So, and then of course already, the World Economic Forum, some of those people are talking about the importance of building back LA better, and the Olympics is coming up in 2028, so they want to have something to show to the world. And LA, of course, is on the list of 100 cities in the world that the Rothschilds, I think it was the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers, maybe it was the Rockefellers, made of the that should be smart, could be remade as smart cities with surveillance. And so I think to me it looks like they're starting off hitting pretty hard right off the bat with this happening. And it's real. I mean, it's really tragic too. I mean, we our good friend, you probably know this, everybody. If you don't know it, I guess I'll just tell you that our good friend Lisa Levinson, are you aware of Lisa Levinson? She's a very well-known activist in the vegan community. Madeline and I have been working with Lisa for, gosh, at least 20 years. She started the vegan spirituality website, and she actually is very, very nice. She always says that, Will Tuttle is the father of the vegan spirituality. We're just trying to, do his work, basically. But she's a very hard worker. She also works for In Defense of Animals, and does so much really for the movement. And every time we go through Los Angeles, she organizes a lecture for us, and it's always really good. We get good turnouts. And we have never met her partner, Arthur Simoneaux, but we've heard a lot about him. And they both have these houses, and we stayed in Lisa's house. And Arthur also has a house. They're married. They're not married, but they're partners, and they both live in Topanga Canyon in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles area. And after one of the lectures, we drove back in there. To Topanga Canyon. We spent the night at Lisa's house. She's just buried in these gigantic trees. It's a beautiful place. I mean, it's so beautiful. But the little tiny roads, going winding back up these steep little canyons, and then little houses nestled in among these trees. It's just in nature with little creeks going down. And all the neighbors know each other. It's a very intimate little kind of a place. And so Arthur, her partner, just had this feature article written about him in the LA Times, because he wasn't very unfortunately he was burned alive in that fire. He's dead. He was just he didn't get out. He went in, actually. He went in to try to save his house, and you can't go into that. I mean, there's nowhere to go if you go into those canyons and the fire. The wind is blowing. I guess that's what happened. So he was, but it's great to read the article. I put the article in the resources about him. Is it in? I think it's in. I can check here. Let me just quickly check. It might be in. It might be too. Yeah, I guess it's in that. It's in. Oh no, it's in this month. Yeah, it's the very last. It's at the on the last one on the first page of the resources for January. Is the article from the LA Times, and they talk about Arthur Simoneaux. He was like kind of famous among the hang gliding community. He kind of star. He was the first hang glider one of the first ones off the coast of LA right there, and over the ocean. He and the earliest hang gliders, they went to the hardware store and they bought, materials to try it out, and they went out there. And he was 68 years old with a long white hair ponytail kind of guy, old hippie, and he was still hang gliding, almost every day, and really a real risk taker. He loved taking risks. He loved trying things. And we heard a lot of stories about him. Real outdoors guy in nature. He was just up skiing, I guess, at Mammoth, and then he heard about the fires, and so he came back. And he heard, and so he went right in. He just drove his car, and his friend got on the cell phone with him and told him. I guess he had connection with the computer, and he could tell which roads were open and which roads were closed. So he was able to, even though it was mandatory evacuation and no one was allowed in, he got in anyway to try to save his house, but he was killed. So he's one of the casualties, and there's probably going to be more of them. But there's a lot of unanswered questions, and I find it pretty disturbing just to see how what happened in Lahaina, what happened in paradise, what's happening here, seems to be following a pattern. And I think there's probably a lot of other places too, in Canada and other places. The whole idea is, I think in many ways, it could be anyway, sort of a using fire as a weapon of warfare against the people. And really, I mean, you destroy people's homes. That's a major thing. And it looks like, a lot of these areas were just bombed. I mean, it doesn't look like a normal, like a forest fire kind of a thing, because a lot of the trees and brush are still green, and the houses and cars are all completely bombed and melted and everything. So to me, it's very suspicious the way the whole thing happened, and also the way Gavin Newsom just immediately jumped on the bandwagon and said, "Wait, don't worry, we got everything figured out. How we're going to build it back, and it'll be better than ever." And one of the things I've seen, and we've talked about it too, over the years, over the last maybe 30 years, anytime there's this gross negligence and gross mismanagement, and just ridiculous, like these fires. Like, there's no water in the hydrants. The reservoirs are all dry. The mayor's out of town. Everybody's asleep. They didn't care about it. They knew you could have fire anytime. I mean, it's known to have fires there. And so typically, it was the same thing on 9/11. It was the same thing with COVID. It's the same thing. It's always the same thing. It's always, whatever it is, there's like, everybody's asleep at the switch. They do ridiculous things. And then there's never any accountability, I just am sure that it's a cover for a deliberate act, right? I mean, you say, "Oh, sorry, I just made a mistake," No, it's not a mistake. And there was just one mistake after another. And it's always like this in these situations. If they were really on top of things, then that wouldn't have happened. And the thing is, it's possible. For example, somebody made the point, I think it's a really good point. If you had any intelligence at all, there's this basic awareness that right there in Southern California, not far away, there are two big military bases, and together they have about 67,000 soldiers, right? It wouldn't be hard to give them basic training in fighting fires. And then you say, okay, you got a fire, you have 67,000 firefighters they're paid, they're willing, they're strong young men ready to go in and do something, right? I mean, it wouldn't be hard. You could have, I mean, they were giving away, they cut the budget for the fire department over and over again. They didn't have any money. They gave away a lot of their equipment. I mean, the whole thing, again, this massive, ridiculous mismanagement, which we've seen in California, is absolutely disgusting, and people are paying for it with their lives, literally, and with their livelihoods and with everything. And now the insurance companies all knew ahead of time, right? They all canceled their policies ahead of time, so a lot of people don't have insurance. It's the same thing, the insider training at 9/11, and they all know ahead of time. Lahaina, they knew ahead of time. So I think it's almost like they rub our noses in it. Like, we'll do whatever the heck we want, and we'll make you look like you're so stupid, you'll just let us do it, right? It's like with 9/11. I mean, that was so obvious. COVID was so obvious. I mean, these things are so obvious, and yet people are still, like some people posted things about that on our World Peace Diet Facebook group, and then vegans are all writing, "Oh no, another conspiracy theory. Why can't you just trust the experts like everybody else?" That's what a lot of vegans are posting. They're like, and bird flu, like now we have bird flu, and anyone who tries to question bird flu, "What do you think you know more than the authorities? Are you a medical authority? What makes you think you know more than the authorities?" And people are trying to use these things somehow. And then of course they blame everything on climate change. They blame everything on viruses. They blame, Ali. And it's always an excuse for more violence against people and more taking away of our freedom. And I have to wonder, how is it that we don't see this? What is it about our educational system that dumbs us down so much, and about the vegan tribe that makes us, not able to be the tribe? The vegan tribe, to me, should be the ones who are right on the front of questioning official narratives. That's what we practice at. We practice questioning official narratives. That's why we're vegans. So what's going on? And yet it's, It's not a very, it's not, they're not very good at that for some reason. Yeah. So anyway, if anyone has any thoughts about this, oh yeah, yeah, Gino, yes, you have your hand up. Sure, what do you think? Have any thoughts? Anyone else?
Yeah, I do have thoughts. You know, when the very first person, whoever it was, that said, oh, this is, they did this on purpose kind of thing, I thought, well, wait a second, please, let me get a little more evidence, a little more information, because all it took was one person to say that, then everybody jumped on board, like, yeah, this is, the government did this and everything. Because I've seen that kind of thing before, too, where they just jump to conclusions. So I want to have a little bit of evidence. So a lot of the things that you said, Will, I think are very valid. One of the things that started to turn me around on this was the insurance companies. I could not believe what I read about the insurance companies. Just before the fires started, you know, they stopped the coverage. I said, whoa, that's very suspicious that the
right.
insurance companies would do that. Holy, holy. So yeah, there's that. But what I would like to see, so early on this time, is for, I don't know if you need to do documentaries or speeches before the public or something, that this come to the fore big time right away so that people can see all the evidence. If you wait too long, it's like 911 and everything. People kind of, you know, say, well, no, I don't think that's right, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, the vaccines and all of that. A question I have also, do you see that this, the fire thing might be a pattern in terms of, the one thing I can think of is in 2023, we had those fires in Hawaii, which destroyed a whole lot of stuff, but the wealthy people seem to manage all right. Do you see something in common with those two?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's definitely a pattern. And, I think I mean, there's different ways of looking at it. I don't know the big story. I mean, there's some people that write about it, that this is, goes back thousands of years, that this is, you know, offering a fire offering to Moloch, you know, a fire offering to the deities that they worship. And to just burn people's homes, burn a city down, and then of course rebuild it in their image, and in their image is a technocratic. It's called a panopticon. You know, a panopticon is a prison where one or two people can see everybody, right? And you had, so it's like, before they had digital surveillance, they would create prisons. They were called panopticons, where one guard could see all, you know, 200 prisoners, and it was very efficient. It's like a good way, you don't need many people to kind of keep track of everybody. And now with AI and digital surveillance and so forth, I mean, they're openly talking about this. That's why I think the climate change narrative is so important to question that, because they usually use that. I mean, Angel Honig in Hawaii sent me this email that Bernie Sanders sent out to everybody on his mailing list. And Bernie Sanders, who I can't believe I wanted him to be president at one point, but anyway, he was saying, don't let anyone say that this was any kind of political mistake, or mistakes by politicians had nothing to do with this. This was a climate change. This fire shows that what we need to do is we need to have stricter laws regulating our burning of fossil fuels, and we have to attack climate change. This has got nothing to do with anything that anyone did wrong in California or Los Angeles. And I just think, you know, they're just twisting everything around to further enslave us, and yet it's very tempting to think of to go that way. You know, I can see how, why people say, yeah, it was climate change, we need to trust our good government and our authorities and not think too much and into it. And it's such a mistake, you know, because I guess it's the boomerang effect again. You know, when we sow the seeds of domination and exploitation of animals, we reap that ourselves. And it's like since we're dominating and exploiting animals every day and eating that, we're eating that whole energy, then it's almost like subconsciously we crave to be dominated. You know, it's called the sadomasochistic thing. You know, someone who typically, people who are sadists very often are also masochistic. Like they enjoy inflicting pain, but they want to also have pain inflicted on them. It's this weird thing, but that's just kind of how it works. We dominate and exploit, and then we think it's a hierarchical, like Eric Fromm talked about this hierarchical mentality that has, I always have somebody below me and I always have somebody above me, and there's no freedom there, right? He called that the escape from freedom, because we're just part of a chain and we do whatever they say, and then we inflict it on those below us, and it just goes that way. It's these corporate military hierarchies that run things, and nobody has any responsibility. They're just following orders, and we go through these same schools where we just please the teacher and you get to the next grade, and then you just try to please the authorities, and that's all we try to do, and we just believe them and trust them and try to please them all the time. And there's no spirituality at all. It's just pure robotic materialistic devastation of the human spirit and of animals and ecosystems. And animals pay the big price. I mean, think of all the animals that were just burned out of their homes, and the ecosystems destroyed, and children. I mean, children pay a huge price. Children come in with tremendous potential, but they immediately start getting, unfortunately, conditioned in these ways that just make them become the enforcers when they get older onto their children, right? It just goes through the generations. So the whole idea, I guess, really is to me, is to cut it at the root, which is animal agriculture, essentially. And if we don't cut that root of animal agriculture, we keep sowing the seeds for our own enslavement continually. So it's just that as vegans, the big problem I see is that the world should look at us as having a somewhat noble and aware perspective, that we're eating healthy food, we're not falling for narratives that are promoted by the military and by pharmaceutical complex and so forth, that we're questioning that stuff. And yet I see the vegan movement, you know, using these lies in order to try to promote veganism. Like, well, climate change, that's a good one to jump on that bandwagon, because, you know, if you eat meat, you're contributing to greenhouse gases. Like, but that's a lie. There aren't any greenhouse gases. I mean, there's water vapor is the main greenhouse gas, and it's not carbon dioxide. It's not a greenhouse gas. I mean, it is, but it doesn't do anything. So they don't want to hear that, because no, we shouldn't give up that great advantage we have to use that as a tool. And the same thing with bird flu. You know, some of these well-known vegan activists were right. I saw it on Facebook, and they were saying, we got bird flu now. Somebody died of bird flu. Finally, now we can really go after the dairy and the meat industry and all that and get them for bird flu. And then somebody said, well, don't you know, like, bird flu is a psyop. No, it's not a psyop. It's real. We got to use it. And then the problem is, I was talking to my friend Phil today. Madeline and I were at lunch, and he said, I'm not sure where he got the information, but he said that he read or heard anyway that the vegan movement has reduced by 10% over the last couple of years. It's shrinking, you know. And he said, if you go on Instagram and a lot of these places where people are really posting a lot of content, he said there's massive amount of content just slamming vegans. The vegans are unhealthy. The vegans are stupid. The vegans are unconnected. You know, this huge, huge thing slamming vegans. That's new. I mean, relatively new. I mean, people didn't used to do that. So I think it's a combination of, there is, you know, the globalist plutocrats that really have the power. They want to see veganism slammed and marginalized. You know, that's one of their biggest threats. But also the vegan movement itself is causing that, I think, of the way we act, the way we eat junk food. I mean, vegans celebrate. If you read Veg News or most of these vegan magazines, they're just celebrating, you know, foods that if you eat that, you probably won't be very healthy. It used to be vegan food was healthy food. We were eating organic and healthy food, and we were healthy, and we were had, you know, had better health. And now it's very common for people to say that they tried eating vegan food and man, they had to get off it because they're so unhealthy. And it's this commercial vegan food. And the same thing with, we're getting vaccinated. We're championing, you have Michael Greger, you know, all these doctors, you know, proudly getting vaccinated and telling everybody they should be vaccinated. And so all these things happening. I mean, so many things like that. And promoting these scams like bird flu and, you know, whatever disease comes along. So so that's the situation. And I think at some point, we're just, you know, doing the best we can to make a narrative that's liberating rather than furthering the power of those who are actually in, turning us into livestock as well as animals into livestock as well, you know, both together. Somebody who started talking or anyone else?
I just wanted to say that it almost seems like we can't share that word anymore. It's like we need a different word or to draw. I don't know. That's a bit awkward because it's good to have a name for it. But yet, I mean, to me, veganism means you don't take shots that are tested and have animal parts in them and human fetal cells. I mean, you don't follow those narratives. You don't follow the whole, you know, pharmaceutical industrial complex that's part of it. And so it's like the people who followed, gone that other direction. It's like, I don't want to share that word vegan with them anymore. It's just like a different, it's confusing that we're like, we need a new word or we need to drop vegan.
Well, you know, I think that's an interesting point because the American vegans, I mean, not the American, the vegan society, right? The vegan society in England, right when COVID came out, they said everybody should get vaccinated. And when they promoted the vaccine, that's something we should all do. And basically all of the vegan groups, the American Vegan Society, all of them, PETA, PCRM, any of them you can name, think of, they were all on board with social distancing, masking. You had to wear, if you wanted to come to any of the animal rights vegan conferences, you had to wear a mask, you had to be vaccinated, or they wouldn't let you in. You know, they were totally the opposite. They would never let me, they would ban me from all the veg fests because I was questioning it. All these, you know, the whole movement, I mean, for the most part, is not on your wavelength, Anne.
Well, I don't think I want to even use the word vegan anymore. Yeah. Another word, because I'm not that, whatever that is. I'm not that.
I'm kind of in love with this word vegan. I've always said it's a great word. You know, we gotta keep it pure, but it's very divisive and it's confusing. And I like the word, I like the concept of animal liberation, right? I mean, I like the concept of ahimsa, nonviolence. And I like the idea. I like the word plant source. I'm kind of sort of coining that now, plant source instead of plant based, because plant based means sort of junk food, and plant sourced, we're trying to get, you know, whole food.
Well, how about cruelty free eating?
Yeah. Cruelty free is another good one. Yeah. In China, they had a big conflict between pure vegetarian and vegan. They won't use the word vegan, so they ended up saying the world peace diet. They call it the world peace eating for world peace. I thought, yeah, that's a good one. That's really what it is too, you know. A few more hands are up here, but thank you, Anne. I like your idea. The word vegan has got so much
like that.
Baggage,
that's like,
you know?
And very people, different types of people using that word.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Any other thoughts on this? Dobby. I just want to say hi for Dobby.
Oh.
She wanted to attend and her computer is not working and she's not feeling very well.
Oh.
Just wanted to let
Tyler,
you know.
We send our prayers and love to her in England. Yeah, she's amazing. She joins at 2 o'clock in the morning, her time, every time we do it. Okay, ththanks, Dan, for letting us know. Aradhana, do you want, you have your hand up?
Use of the word vegan. And,
a little louder if you can.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Okay.
I have some thoughts on using the word vegan or shying away from the use of the word vegan. It feels wrong to me. It feels like what I'm saying. What feels wrong to me is to abandon the word, which means a very pure philosophy, because others have misused it. I think we need to be focusing on educating what veganism really means. And with all due respect, when I hear plant sourced, I don't hear a difference between plant sourced and plant based. And if I don't hear a difference, I would imagine that it's likely that the common population will see no difference whatsoever. And when we're trying to educate that veganism is a beautiful, loving way of life, it's a philosophy rather than a diet, and then we, as a reaction, start using other terms like plant forest, which to me sounds like plant-based, which absolutely is about dietary choices. Then what? Then if we choose a new word and start using that, then are they not going to follow with a different attack on that word, and we'll just keep running and changing what our language is in reaction to their attacks? I would rather share, just continue to share what veganism really is and stand for that. That's my thought at this point. I could be persuaded differently, and I respect, above all, your thoughts on it, Will, but.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Aradhana. That's what I guess that's the reason in these two books that just came out, I kept using the word vegan. I used the word vegan in them a lot. I kept saying vegan because I do have a loyalty to Donald Watson because I think his vision, who, when he created the word, it was very pure. I'm very kind of furious, not really furious, but I'm disappointed, I guess. That the vegan societies and all these groups have seemed to me to go so far away from what the original vision of it was. And I see it really from the point of view of a spiritual point of view too, like the Buddha and other people when they were living a life of compassion for all beings, they didn't have a word vegan, but they were living that life. And so in the Food for Freedom, the word I use actually most is deep veganism. I say deep veganism to distinguish it from veganism. And it's kind of like deep ecology movement. And I just had a feeling like we've got to do something. The deep veganism is, but I don't want to have a word that to feel superior, but just the idea that it's not just being vegan as an outer thing. It's understanding the underlying principles that are involved. And I remember the deep ecology movement that really was very helpful, I think, to the ecology movement because it really called people to try to understand at a deeper level our relationship with the earth, not merely in terms of how much we're polluting things, but at a deeper, more spiritual level. And I see the same thing with veganism. We need a deeper. It's not just how we vote with our dollars, what we're buying, but it's understanding the role of materialism, just the role of the indoctrination and how it's interconnected with other forms of violence and abuse to human beings and everything. It's a much deeper view. And actually, Gabriel Cousins and I are going to be doing a joint once a month. It's going to be on a Wednesday. Once a month on a Wednesday. We haven't decided if it's the first Wednesday of the month. Probably starting in March. Probably starting in March. On the vegan community platform. So we're going to be talking about this, I think, quite a bit because he has a similar view. I think he's written books on veganism and consciousness and spirituality. He sometimes uses the word holistic veganism, to kind of make a qualifier there. Like it's not just veganism, it's holistic veganism. And I use the word deep veganism, but it's the idea is you see veganism in a bigger view. You see it in a larger perspective that includes how we live our life medically and socially and our responsibility and all these different things. So we can keep the word vegan and then just we'll have to weather the storm, I think. I mean, it is a word that's much maligned and abused, unfortunately, but it still has a pure meaning at its core, I think. Andy, you had your hand up for a while also, I think. Oh, where'd she go? Oh, there she is. Yeah. You have to unmute.
There we go. Okay, sorry. Boy, each topic keeps moving on and I'm forgetting my thoughts, but I'll do my best here. Yeah, I love the thought of vegan has been my favorite word for many, many years, and I don't care who attacks it, it's my favorite word. I want to feel I have that belief of bring back veganism of what we've always thought of it. Don't allow other people's attacks to turn it around. And I'm trying to think, you were also talking about, oh, how the other vegan communities like PETA and all these vegan doctors have bought into all the lies and everything. And I have tried, like right in the beginning when I discovered that, I separated from those vegan groups or connections. And then I actually, Gino, I saw that you were connected with DXC locally and things like that. And that gave me the courage to at least get on those sites again. And so what I've done is wherever I can, I try to get on these sites and make comments or make posts. And where before I was, you know, like the rest of us, you know, we were all like ostracized from the vegan community because suddenly we were evil because we, you know, didn't trust Big Pharma. So I've tried to get on there and make statements like, you know, Big Pharma, the biggest animal torturers and murderers in the world, how are they suddenly your best friend? You know, anything to get people to think, because that was my first introduction to animal torture and murder was Big Pharma. It wasn't through what they were doing with food. And I've never, ever trusted Big Pharma for like 50 years. And I'm like, how are you suddenly their best friends? So I do my best to try to wake people up to that. And Will, I'm also so grateful that you've brought up the whole, you know, fake meat thing, the vegan meat that has the so-called freedom community attacking vegans because of these, you know, Bill Gates meats and things like that. So I've tried to respond to people, like, let's say people that know the whole germ theory is fraud. And oh wait, I'm sorry, not that. It was people that still believe in there's a right or a left. And you guys may all believe that, but there's a lot of people like the Larkin Rose or Legal Man who believe the left and the right are the exact same and the exact equal. And you get other people that are like on the right, and they'll say, oh, well, if you don't agree with me, you must be on the left, or, you know, and vice versa. So I try to give that as an example of, you know, let's say to someone like Larkin Rose as an example, because he knows the left and the right are just like the two wings of the same bird. So if someone in his position said something like, okay, you know, well, if you're vegan, you must support the Bill Gates meat or something. And I can respond by saying, well, that's like saying, you know, the left saying the right is, you know, must be such and such. It's like you have to start thinking for yourselves and not just assume if you're on this belief, you automatically have to be against the other belief. I don't know. I think that came out a little weird. I don't know if I got my point or not, but I don't know. I just have to throw out there again, I am so grateful for this group and what you have done, Will, and I'm still trying to find that worldwide vegan summit that you did. I don't know how I can continue to access it and rewatch it
Oh,
because
it's
I
easy. It's just go to worldpeacediet.com and the website and go to the bottom. And I really left it up there, so it's easy to find. Well, I'll go
Okay.
there. I'll
Well,
just go there right now. I mean, let me just make
I
sure.
find everything complicated, so
Yeah. You go to
but
worldpeacediet.com, just scroll to the bottom of the page, and it
okay.
says the second to last sentence, see and share the recordings and transcripts of the 2021 Worldwide Vegan Summit for Truth and Freedom. And you click on that link, and it gives you all the videos. They're all on Vimeo.
Oh, fabulous.
But
Okay,
just the
so I
second to
have to
last
go on
sentence at
that
the very
and
bottom.
we can publicize it everywhere, right?
Yeah, it's open.
Okay.
It's free. I
That
want
I will
everyone
do
to.
that. And just the last thing, I just can't even imagine surviving the 2020 insanity without what you have done here. This is, and the people here, I just can't even imagine it. And all of the freedom people right in the beginning of 2020, it's like I learned about Peggy Hall, Del Bigtree, even though, I don't completely agree with a lot of his things now, but everybody I learned about was from you. And you had the courage where all these other vegans were like, anyway, that's all. I want to hear from everybody else, but thank you and thank everyone here so much.
Thank you. Yeah, that's nice. You know, I ruined my reputation with 1,000 people, but 10 people thought it was pretty good. So
No, really, no,
the good one.
I totally agree with Andy on that, because it would have been so, I mean, it's already been very demoralizing. As well, oh, you're sorry.
Right.
Very demoralizing, because this whole group
Didn't happen
of people in
tonight.
Portland, Oregon, for example, that it just seemed to have turned totally opposite of what I
I
thought we were.
know.
And then,
Yeah.
so
Gino, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, I want to say, Andy, I agree with everything you said 100%, 101%. So thank you for everything you said. What I want to add here is that humans have this illness, this sickness about making everything complex. Because we all have fertile minds, it may be because we have different belief systems and all of this stuff and egos, and we think we're right, we're never wrong, all this stuff. And I've seen it in the vegan movement now forever. And the whole debate about using the word vegan, that's been going on now for a few years. And every time I see it on social media and everything, I hearken back to what you said, Will, about Watson's original definition of what it is. What's so hard to understand about that? Let's just stay with that and move forward, okay? No, because of this, because of that, and it goes on and on. And yeah, so now some people say vegan is the bad word now. And I agree with Andy that I will continue to use it. Now, I did have a friend stay with me recently for a couple of weeks. I would say diet-wise, he's probably around 90% cruelty-free. And before he left, because of my influence, because he was not allowed to eat anything that came from animals while he was here, he said, I really think, it'd be good for me and my diet if I went fully vegan. And then I said to him, you know what? I'll tell you what. If you go vegan for the animals, you will not have to worry about turning back or anything else. It's about the animals. It's not about diet. Sure, if you eat cruelty-free food, you're going to feel better, but you can also sway away from that at any time. But once you see what they do to the animals, you're in. You can't
Right.
justify. You're
You
going to
can't
see
pay
somebody
for it.
eating a
Yeah.
hamburger in a fast food place, and you're going to get really turned off. And I'm glad you would be turned off. It's worth it. So yeah, and I tell people, they say, "Oh, you're vegan?" I say, "I am." I said, just to clarify, I am an animal liberation activist. And then that really more hits home for them, so they
Yeah.
understand what vegan is.
Right. Yeah.
Thanks. I'm emphasizing my words like this because it's simple. All right, I'm done.
Thanks. Thanks, Gino. Yeah. Tammy, you have your hand up, I think. Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. It was interesting. I was doing a podcast with Claire Mann today,
Ah.
and love her. She
Yeah. Wonderful.
connects quite frequently. Well, and talking a little bit about Vestopia, but also about really effective, she calls it eloquent communication as a vegan, you know, how much of a difference that makes. And even, you know, even the slight tweaks in the way we say stuff instead of why do you, and not getting them to justify, but just tell me about, you know, tell me about you, basically, and open up conversations. But, you know, the one thing I was thinking about ever since the interview is that, you know, her book, Vestopia, What It's Like for Vegans Living in a Non-Vegan World. But now there's this whole other division, you know, and it really came clear with the whole pandemic and climate, you know, the climate agenda. And, you know, I work with somebody that's pushing a climate agenda, but I started a community within that community. And I keep pushing for us to be focusing on the grandchildren of all species. That's the reason why there's the struggle that there is. Even Captain Paul Watson said that on an interview on Chain News. You know, it's like when Jane was saying climate change, he said, before that is the ecosystems and all the beings that are being destroyed in the ecosystems. So, you know, I continually have this other little inner turmoil going on, you know, that I keep addressing because I'm within the vegan community, people I really love. I love, you know, Dr. Silas Rao. I really do. I think he's doing a lot of really good work. But I think we have to be careful, and it just creates a really interesting piece, you know, that I want to be in there working for the ecosystems and the grandchildren of all species, and to see if I can, you know, tidy up the whole push on climate. I keep saying that, you know, to all of my community, you know, that the grandmothers formed for the ecosystems and the grandchildren of all species. So anyways, it's a struggle. It's a bit of a struggle for me. I have to keep letting go of the struggle. I'm going to India for a month with Silas. We're going to be talking, I'm not talking climate. I'm talking ecosystems and the movie McAdoo, Mother's Milk. That was done in India, an amazing documentary if you haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm going to spend, you know, a bunch of time at Satna Forest. And, you know, that's what I'm vegan for, to be amongst the animals in a forest where they're restoring land and, you know, without any other agenda. And so I hear you all that it's an interesting journey to be on, that there's, and, you know, well, your name wasn't, you know, ruined, or your reputation wasn't ruined. It was just, it's just that those people just aren't awake yet. You know, it's too much. It's too much for people to look at, you know, it's too much. Dr. Zach Bush said that he was a 3-board certified physician. And when he found out that all of his training was bought and paid for, he said it was too much. He just unplugged from everything and went and built a log house out in the country for 2 or 3 years. And then he ended up building a center and, you know, being quite successful. But it's too much for people to really imagine that, you know, their friends, like I have a lot of friends that were in California, 3 of the grandmothers that lost their house, you know, or 2 that lost their homes and 1 that her son, you know, and it's just too much for them to imagine that those could be started by their own people on purpose. It's too much. So I have a lot of compassion for it. But it's hard. It's hard to know and not be able to talk about it because it's not appropriate at times. You know that the relationship will completely shut down, and that's not the best way to have that particular relationship, which is what I've come to know. It's not like I'm selling myself out, but I'm balancing in the middle. Anyways, I've said enough. But yeah, it does feel like a weird place to be in, because I studied with Gabriel Cousins for a decade, and he's completely on board with everything that we're talking about and what Will talks about. I mean, that was our training. You know, we had some leading authors in there talking. Part of our training was vaccinations, and leading authors coming in and talking about, you know, all the science, the true science on vaccination damage and all of it. You know, one of our required readings was Will's book, The World Peace Diet. So he's very up on this stuff. And anyways, it's very yeah. interesting. So I'm looking forward to those workshops that you and
right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think, yeah, we're talking about some of those things, you know, just being willing to really discuss all of the different issues that are up and creating, not trying to create unity within the vegan community, but just trying to create a discussion, you know, to talk about these things rather than to say, no, you're not allowed to talk about that. we're going to ban you because you're talking about that. Now, I would love to just, you know, talk to the people who believe in these things and see if maybe they could see that there's when you really, because I know what it's like. I wrote the foreword for Silas Rao's book, right? I mean, I believed all the whole climate change baloney for probably 8 years from 2006 to 2014 or 15 until I started realizing, wait a minute, this whole thing is, yeah, it just added up more and more. I could see that it was a scam. It had the same thing. It's like people who tried to publish anything questioning climate change could never get it published in any of the journals. It's all controlled from the top, from Rockefeller, from the Club of Rome, the whole thing. I mean, and so but it took a while. And I'm so glad that I, you know, was able to just admit that I was wrong. You know, okay, I was wrong. Good. Now let's not keep beating this, you know, promoting this thing that's a lie. And I'm a little bit like, why don't other people do that? Why don't they just admit that, yeah, it's a hoax? I mean, it's pretty obvious now. I mean, more and more, everything's coming out. It's the whole climate thing is completely unraveling. I mean, there's major studies coming out showing that, I mean, in Nature, the number one most prestigious journal there is, Nature, just published an article saying there has been no global warming at all in the last 70 years. It's not gone up. And so, you know, it's not statistically significant. I mean, it's just doing nothing. It's not going up. And yet you have the UN guy saying global boiling is happening and all this, you know, it's unraveling. It has to unravel. It's a lie. I mean, it's not true. And there's so many levels of it. So I don't know how long people are going to hang on to this thing and keep. But the problem is that I guess we get invested in a position and we don't want to let go. So.
There are giant corporations that are making mega have oh, built
trillions of dollars every I mean, like money a trillion dollars
that's,
a year.
That's yeah. well, that's got a
it's money. It's all about money. Well, it's about control. You know, and that's the thing. I say in the World Peace in the Food for Freedom, when you want to enslave cows and pigs and chickens, there's only one thing you have to do, which is don't let them go anywhere. Right? Keep them in one place. They're slaves. So that's the same thing with climate change. It's like you can't go anywhere. This is a 15-minute city. You got to stay here because you can't fly. You can't drive. It's going to harm the environment. It's going to harm the climate. And that's you have slaves then. And so we really have to understand that that's the agenda behind this is just to not let us go anywhere and put in cities that are built around surveillance. And this is the excuse and get us to condemn anyone who questions that, actually. Susan, you've had your hand up for quite a while, and I know we're getting a little bit close to our time to end, so.
Thanks, yes. Will. you know, one thing I was going to say, I saw this video about something called Something Fresh, where all the fruit, and then they said including organic fruit, is going to be put through this process where it'll last forever and that kind of thing. So that was scary. And I don't know how true that is. And the other thing is, like, talking about global warming, like someone said to me, who's like, how come everybody's so cold? Like, I have a friend about to go to the Bahamas and it might be 40 and 50 degrees there. So first of all, if it's global warming, why is the country so cold? Everywhere, the Texas is cold and Georgia is cold, and it's like totally colder than it ever was. And it's just everything is very difficult. So I'm very impressed how brave you are, Will. And I wrote a comment about, you know, reading this book about that Bobby Kennedy wrote called American Values about his upbringing. And it goes into the whole JFK assassination. And it is terribly distressing, you know, that the whole CIA and Lyndon Johnson and all the people that were involved in killing Kennedy. But, you know, those Kennedys just keep going with their bravery. And Donald Trump is going with his bravery. I mean, he got shot at. It's just really scary out here. Thanks.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah, I know. It'll be interesting to see over the next few months and years what's actually going to be able to be done in the face of the massive wealth and power of the deep state. And, I've noticed, like, Tulsi Gabbard had committed, she had said publicly that she's going to be the new director of national intelligence or something like that, and that she would not ever be in favor of warrantless wiretapping, right? So that governments can just survey you without your permission. And apparently she's now backtracked on that because she realized that if she said that, she would not be approved by the Senate. Because the Senate is basically controlled by the deep state. And so now she's backtracked on that. And apparently, as I read another article today saying that Kennedy's also backtracking somewhat on his emphasis on vaccines, and he's not going to talk about that. He's going to go for the food. I mean, food is important, so he's going to have, you know, safe food, but the vaccine, you know, they don't want anybody touching vaccines. And I think in many, you know, I'm a big food, you know, obviously all of us really want healthy food. We want vegan, organic food, and that really is important, but I'm telling you, vaccines are really what's destroying the health of children and people so intensely. I mean, just so horrifically. It's such a slaughter and destruction of, you know, the autism rate has gone through the roof because of vaccines and so many other things. So we'll see. But I think it's important for us down here in the grassroots level to keep the pressure on and say, come on, Bobby, you know, go after the vaccines, and, you know, and come on, Tulsi, you know, we, you know, hold, because the power and the money, and I think in many ways the pure evil really that inhabits Washington D.C. It needs something, some light, you know, it needs a lot of light. But I, you know, the funny thing is, I think even with all of the terrible things that are happening in L.A. and all the other problems, I still have this feeling sort of deep down that there's a tremendous wave of peace and love and awakening that's coming to planet Earth right now. I just feel that something really good is happening. And I think this goodness, this awakening, this it's like a birth energy is unstoppable. Ultimately, it's going to happen. And there's a, you know, gnashing and grinding and everything else of bombing and burning and everything else, and we just got to keep steady and just keep loving and keep awakening ourselves and helping our friends and neighbors and keep spreading the vegan message, because we're on the side of ultimate victory, of truth. There's only one power, and it's love, and it's one life that lives through all of us. It can never be defeated ultimately. So it's really wonderful to come to planet Earth during this kind of a challenge and to not waver, you know, to find the ability to refrain from lowering our vibration, I guess, to, you know, to get into fear or anger about this stuff. That's what they want. They want us to, you know, freak out and attack each other and be afraid and so forth. And I think the beautiful thing is that through all of this, and I remember feeling that when, like, in the darkest days of COVID, you know, the more hatred comes at me, the more love is going to go back. And that's it. I'm not, you know, there's no reason to return hatred for hatred, right? It's stupid. It's like putting my hand on a hot burner. It's going to come back and as It just causes more misery for everybody. So this is the test, really. And what veganism really is, you know, what veganism is love. You know, it's love, not just theoretically, but it's actually for animals, for each other, for ecosystems, for ourselves, for the whole interconnected web of life, and actually love. And there is no love without wisdom, really, right? I mean, there's no real compassion without understanding what's really going on at the deeper level. You know, there's that old saying of the very compassionate monkey that sees a fish down in a river and, oh, he wants to stay and brings the fish up to the safety of the tree, right? All that compassion, but there's no wisdom. So we have, so the wisdom, it really, I think, is for us to know what, how to say what we're saying, like we heard from Tammy, you know, just to be able to communicate and listen to the people who are afraid of what we're saying, and be present with what vegan life actually is. So this is a powerful time, and Madeline and I are getting kind of ready to have our closing prayer. But before we do, I think it would be it's really interesting just to think that in a few days we'll be, you know, we have a lot of friends here in West Palm Beach. They're all going up to Washington D.C. for the inauguration. Everybody's going up there. We know so many people are going up for the inauguration. Yeah. And it's supposed to be, the high on the inauguration day is like 20 degrees in Washington, D.C. I mean, I don't know what they're doing with the weather. Weather warfare, I think, is a real thing. But anyway, it's going to happen. What's going to matter is what's going to happen after that. And of course, in the big picture, we always get the so-called government that reflects us. So if we want a better government, we got to be more loving and kind and just and so forth ourselves, and then we'll be worthy of that. So we're not going to be saved by anybody. We got to save ourselves. That's the bottom line. So thanks everyone for your comments. The chat is lots of good things here. Check that out before we go if you can, if you'd like. Yeah, a lot happening here. So I guess we can unmute ourselves now, everybody. The great, I guess, you know, Ken Weingart asked if I would say a koan, give a koan. You know, the koans are a question that doesn't have a logical answer. And it's so interesting, you know, like we're together here, and I guess a good koan is how far apart are we? a koan is a Zen question. How far are we actually? How far apart are we from each other? We can meditate on that for the next month. All right, well, much love to all of you. Madeline, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, let's say our prayer. It starts with compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Let's say that together. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again. Compassion encircles the earth
for all beings everywhere.
All right. How far apart are we? Kilometers or miles?
Want to say hi to Will?
What's the answer? Okay, so go forth and multiply the message. We love you. We'll see you the first Thursday of February. We'll have our meditation. And have a great week and stay in touch. Thank you. We love you.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, everyone.
Peace, everyone. Peace.
Bye.
Oh, no. Oh, God. I was like, I was looking at the chat.
It was cool, yeah. Oh, no.